Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Horror Wine and Crime. Sorry, I'm looking at Lo through the camera and we're like, I don't know. I just like feel like we both started giggling.
Because if you don't laugh, you might cry.
That is the most useful words of wisdom.
No, it's not that terrible of a day. It's just, you know, mother of a teenager's day. That's all.
Hey, we're all here for you, Lo. You got everybody, you got HWC's support for you.
HWC. HWC.
We're all chanting for you. You're doing great. And to distract you, we're going to talk about crimes, various crimes.
Yes, we got a couple of few things that we're going to do today, I think.
Some fun stuff too.
Fun stuff. Funny, fun.
Which I'm excited to dive into.
Okay. So we're going to start today is April 16th.
17th.
Yes, that's what I said, 17th.
Close
Okay.
enough.
No, I did realize it was the 17th, but for what I'm going to do, I needed the 16th first.
Oh, okay.
So I got this really cool calendar. Shout out to whoever got it for me. Thank you. I don't remember. I got it for Christmas. It's a true crime calendar. So every day it's like a little crime of the day.
Love that.
And I feel like it might have been Charlotte's dad and girlfriend, Andrea. So if it was you guys, thanks. If it's somebody else, text me and call me an a-hole for not remembering.
Either way, great gift.
Yes. So this is the murders of Frank Rodriguez and Alicia Buller. And it's a part one and part two. That's why. So it was 16th and 17th. But
Oh, so
in.
they left you hanging by the edge of your seat yesterday. You could see the
Oh,
rest
yeah.
today.
Like, because there's no way in hell that I could flip the page to the next day and read ahead.
It has a lock on it until the next day.
Right. But it's Angelina Rodriguez, met Jose Francisco. Frank Rodriguez in February of 2000. By April, he had become her fourth husband, and by September, he was dead. Investigators believe that Angela began plotting Frank's murder shortly after they met. Originally, she tried to loosen the gas cap on the couple's dryer, but Frank reported the leak when he smelled gas. Smart man, my man. Can't fool him. Well, not on that one. In the end, she finished him off with refreshments. Angelina started by spiking his tea with Oleander, which made him sick and weak. Then she spiked his Gatorade with antifreeze, which ultimately killed him. Once Frank was dead, Angelina tried to collect the $250,000 life insurance policy she had taken out on him when they first married. However, his cause of death was listed undetermined, which meant she could not get the death certificate or cash on the policy. So she pushed for more testings, which revealed she had been intentionally poisoning him. Wah, wah, wah.
What a
Yeah.
damn idiot.
So, but if you hold on to your seat, there's a part two for today.
Ready.
Angelina Rodriguez was arrested in February of 2001 for the murder of Frank Rodriguez. And in October 2003, she was found guilty of first-degree murder for financial gain and attempting to dissuade a witness. She was sentenced to death and is on death row in Chowchilla. Never heard of that one. It's in California. Filing appeals. In the years after Angelina's arrest, investigators found that Frank may not have been her first victim. Dun, dun, dun. In 1993, Angelina's 13-month-old daughter, Alicia Fuller, choked to death on a pacifier nipple after it became detached and lodged in her throat. Angelina collected $50,000 in life insurance money after Fuller's death, an additional $700,000 from a lawsuit against the manufacturer of the pacifier. Angelina was not charged with Fuller's death, but the prosecution in her trial for Frank's murder used the baby's death as evidence, arguing that Angelina had intentionally cut the nipple from the pacifier, killing her for financial gain like she killed Frank. I hope you rot in hell very slowly and painfully.
Yeah, like how ruthless.
A baby. Damn. Like, man.
But yeah, like that's insane. Like, it's bad enough poisoning your husband, but then, like, a baby to your own, like, baby. That's so sick. To, like, a whole nother level just for money. And now you're rotting in prison anyway, so, like, what was it even for?
Yeah.
And I love that she pushed them, like, even harder to figure out why he died so she could get the money. And it's like, dude, you just, like, trapped yourself in that.
Yeah, I'm glad she did that because then she got herself in trouble.
Yeah, true.
She legitimately ended up telling on herself.
Yeah. Oh, so crazy. Those are fun. I like those little crime of the day stories. Evil woman.
So, if that wasn't enough to keep you guys going, and you need more, y'all ready for Lowe's Hollywood Lowdown?
I'm ready.
I stayed up all night to create that. Took me hours.
Especially after that, like, I'm even more ready.
Took hours to come up with that. Actually, I kind of came up with Beverly Hills Cop, but apparently that's taken. The whole copyright thing.
Stupid copyright. No, I love the piano slide and the, I don't know, what do you call that at the end? A cymbal?
Yeah.
Cymbal noise.
So, Jenny from the Block, or is she full of crock? That's the headline. And, well, we're going to talk about some stuff because when I went and started doing this segment, I was kind of like, man, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I love J-Lo. I've loved her music. She was a girl. I like her movies. Like, but it's everywhere. So I felt like we needed to address it.
Oh yeah. It's popping off online. Everybody's talking about her right now. That was a good choice.
Yeah, it's been said that, well, I watched a documentary and I watched her music movie. So it was the Never Told Love Story and then This Is Me Now.
Yeah.
So I watched both of them to kind of get a feel of like, what is everybody talking about? Like, so J-Lo, or is she Jennifer? I don't even know what she's going by these days. Jenny.
Jenny from the Block.
I don't know if she's going by that anymore.
I know.
So Jennifer Lopez has basically like been getting a lot of shots thrown at her, saying that she didn't sing some of the recorded songs for her Jenny from the Block, that a former backup vocalist was the one that actually did most of the track. And the rumor is that she uses ghost singers in her career, such as Ashanti, Christina McMillan, and said that they produced her music and she relies on their vocals. Now, I don't know if those ones are 100% true as well. I did see the TikTok video on Snap News, and the girl's name is Natasha Ramos. She was one that's going viral on TikTok stating she is Jenny from the Block. And she said that it was her that did the backup vocalists in 2002. And she said that she also sang on Lopez's other songs, such as I'm Glad, The One, Loving You, and Baby, I Love You. And she did say, like, she feels like all the other ones, excluding Jenny from the Block, they're very much more true blue backup vocals. Like, she really was the backup singer. She said she thinks that the problem with Jenny from the Block is that they kept her laugh in the song. There's a laugh, and that's not J-Lo. It's this girl. And she said, and then they kept some of the ad-libs in, and then they turned the vocals way down. And then where it's like from the Bronx part, that's her, not J-Lo. And in her TikTok video, she said, you know, it was like 2001, 2002. She's not sure, but she had the opportunity to do this. And she said a lot of people stole the song from her. She said, she didn't steal the song from me. She's like, I knew what I was doing when I went in there. Like, it was very clear, like, this is what's going to happen. And she said that at the time she made a deal and she received $3,500 for the recording for all five songs. And she said she's not blaming Jennifer Lopez at all. She believed that her manager on the record label is at fault, like, for doing such a shady deal. She said that J-Lo is a busy boss. She's like, I understand that she loved my voice. She figured she didn't have to do much more for the song. It was a great sound. It was a great beat. She was working smarter, not harder. She said the label screwed me over, and that's it. She said, I did have a chance to work with her multiple times in the studio. And she said she was bubbly. She was down to earth. She was super chill. Like, she was Jenny from the Block. She said she gave me cool chick, like, live in your hood kind of vibe. So that being said, I feel like they're taking parts of her TikTok and hearing what they want to hear and running with it. Like, because she's not coming after J-Lo at all for any of it. She said that, okay, so she also said that part of the deal, because she wasn't there, was that the producer or somebody wanted a kiss from her. And she's like, no, I'm not kissing you. And he's like, yeah, it's in the contract. You get $3,500 and I get a kiss from you. And she's like, I'm not doing that. So that was kind of a big thing too. Like, and now it's 2024, so people are speaking up. And, you know, she's like, if I never see that dirtbag again, then, you know, whatever. She's like, it wasn't worth her career to sacrifice herself for this douchebag, you know. Yeah, she made it sound like she wishes she would have fought for more money. You know, it'd be cool if J-Lo knew about it and maybe cut her a check for some extra money since it's so big. But she's not going after her. She said, you know, she's not even 100% sure J-Lo knew how much she got paid. But there is a big part of her that thinks that J-Lo was in the meeting during talks of it. But again, it doesn't sound like she's holding a grudge. So everybody that's reposting this TikTok video and Snap videos and been like, oh my God, it's all media hype. It's.
Yeah.
But so Jennifer Lopez is her new documentary, The Greatest Love Story Never Told. It's got a lot of controversy and backlash, again, after the TikTok clips, about her growing up from the Bronx went viral. Many TikTokers are starting to comment and saying that she was, more performative and insincere, accusing her of exaggerating her work. They said that in one clip, she was inspired and mocking and basically imitating, messing with her hair, looking in a mirror, reminiscing about growing up in the Bronx. I saw the clip. And while it sounded a little dramatic-ish, I don't necessarily think she was mocking anybody or making fun of anybody. I feel like in her head, she believed it. Like,
Oh, yeah. Like, she seemed like she was being 100% serious in that.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah. And people are just, like, I feel like just making fun of the way that she was, like, taking herself so seriously and, like, talking about it or whatever. Yeah, but, like, I feel like she was really, like, being serious in that moment.
Yeah, it says, I like taking my hair out like this. It reminds me, like, when I was 16 in the Bronx, running up and down the street on the block, crazy little girl who used to be fucking wild and have no limits and all dreams. I kind of believe she believes that. But the residents of the Bronx responded in a video calling her out, saying that, like, her neighborhood, like, wasn't that bad. They're saying that they're just annoyed and they've been silent for too long. They accuse her of lying, saying that, you know, she wasn't that poor. Apparently her mom won like $1 million or $500,000 off a lotto. Her mom was a school teacher. She said that people say that they attended the all girls high school with her and it was an Irish Italian neighborhood. You weren't running up and down no blocks. So they've just been like really hard on her. They said that she's self-absorbed and that she's rude. Some people said that she refers to a clip where she orders a ham and cheese roll, a bag of chips, and an orange drink. And she says, like, oh, if you know, you know. And then I guess some commentators were like, we didn't know what she meant. But maybe in her squad they did. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Right.
So that was from, I want to say, buzznet.com that I got that from. But, and then people are slamming her for the video. You know, she put $20 million in it for her own documentary. She's paying for every single thing on her own. I feel like it was kind of like a walking diary, almost kind of like what Taylor Swift did with the Eras Tour. This was just her way of the things she's been through with all, you know, basically making fun of herself. Like, I've had four husbands. She even said, like, all my little men on the mantle, you know, like she knows that she's been through it. She's had some hard times, you know, she's been through some shit and she gets it. She laughs at herself. She makes jokes about it on herself. Her new album was only number 38 on the Billboard charts, but I feel like it didn't get a lot of play because I didn't hear any of those songs on the radio.
No, so, I heard nothing of it.
Yeah, I didn't either. So I guess she's trying to change it to a greatest hits tour. Someone posted that her tickets were $11,000 for floor seats. I mean, girl. But from what I understand, that it's not J-Lo and Taylor and Selena. It's not those people that pick the prices for the ticket. It's Ticketmaster and the venues and all the fees on top of the fees on top of the fees. Like, now you got convenient fees of what? Clicking them and saving them to your phone. They don't even mail them out to you no more. So what's the convenient fee? Why are we paying a convenient fee?
Right.
There are people on the radio station that said, you know, maybe it might be smart, someone like Taylor, because it's going to take Tay-Tay to put things in motion, okay? That if Taylor starts saying, hey, I'm going to sell tickets myself on my own platform, then I'll get the money. How about that? And make ticket prices where I think they should be. Maybe other celebrities will start doing it and tickets can go back down. Because as of right now, a concert is not something people can go to. Hence, me and Kay are going to the $80, not even that, I think it was $20 because I got them on sale, New Kids on the Block and Paula Abdul concert. So, like, we'd be on the hill for $18.
Yeah, literally. Like, most concerts now are just so insanely priced that it's like you can't even like make it worth like wanting to go because it's just ridiculous.
Especially, you're not going to go by yourself. So if you try to take a kid, it's times two. And then what if you got two kids? Now it's times three, you know?
Oh, yeah. And then it's just wild.
Or you just got to pick, like, you know, it's a toss-up between Melissa and Molly. They're twins. And honestly, I like Molly a little bit better. So, Melissa, you can go on the next one. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah, it's like, who's better this week is who I'm choosing to take.
So that was the J-Lo stuff. I just wanted to touch on it because I was going to say, maybe we should give her a little bit of slack. Like, it's hard. She's getting older and people are saying she's irrelevant and she's trying to keep up with the young kids. She probably is. Like,
yeah.
But I'll tell you what, she's 50-something years old. She's got a body that doesn't stop and she can dance like no other. So I give it up to her for 50 fucking years old, okay?
Oh, for real. Like, literally never have I ever been like that. And she's in her like mid-50s. It's wild.
And then we haven't even
she's done a lot.
I know. Yes, she is. And we haven't even got into the Diddy stuff. I'm not going into it, but that's another boatload that's going to be thrown on top of her as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure that will definitely be a conversation. I guarantee.
And then my last one is Danny Masterson. We all remember him from that 70s show. He was Kelso, the one everybody loved, the smart ass mother effer that did not disappoint when you needed a laugh. Okay. Mm-hmm. He was like the king of clapbacks on that show.
Was he Kelso? I thought Ashton Kutcher was Kelso.
Did I say Kelso?
Wrong? Yeah. Kelso?
He wasn't Kelso.
Yeah, yeah. What was his name? I can't remember.
I did not mean to say Kelso. He was Hyde. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yes, yes, yes. That's right. Hyde. Yeah, I totally forgot.
And I should because I remember Jackie like, Steven.
Right.
Because she's the only one that called him Steven.
Yeah, she was. That's funny.
Okay, so Steven. He got a new mugshot. He's been released and officially into North Kern State Prison for his rape conviction. If you guys did not know, which you'd have to live under a rock to not know, he was, after months and months, he was convicted of two rape counts, two out of three, and the state officials confirmed on Wednesday that he was admitted to North Kern State Prison in Delano. He will initially go through an inmate and a reception process, which will determine the level of security will here be held. I have seen things and read things that he's not having a very easy time right now. I think he's already gotten into a little tussles. But he was sentenced 30 years to life. That started in September, but he is still appealing his conviction, claiming his innocence and standing by.
I wonder if anything, I don't know. I wonder if like, no, he'll get his appeal or if he'll have to stay in there and for how long, I guess. But
I
guess
know.
Time will just tell.
I mean, his mugshot, his eyes do look like evil, but his hair's grown out and he's got a beard and he's got like all this stuff and he's probably stressed and... but like when I look at the mugshot, I'm like, damn, he could have done it. But then I'm like, but he's Steven Hyde. But then I'm like, but people, that was a character on TV and people are assholes behind the screen. So he could have done it. So I don't know. I wasn't in the courtroom. I don't know. I just don't want him to have done it because I really liked him on the ranch as well with Ashton. And
yeah. It's sad because it's like, you like connect to like the characters or whatever, but then it's like, they might be really actually shitty people in real life, especially like if he reached that certain level of like fame, maybe he felt like powerful, like he could like get away with stuff like that. So who knows? Oh,
you can't do stuff like that though.
Mm-mm. It's crazy.
You just can't. You can't go around raping people. You can't put your D in their V if they don't say yes. It's just
yep. And I don't care. I don't care who you are. Still can't do it.
Absolutely. But
it's not, you're in a big TV show.
That's my lowdown for the week. And Crystal is going to give you the headliner of the night. Take yes. it away, Crystal.
All right. Well, thank you for the lowdown. We loved it. And the jingle. Shout out to that.
But I worked so hard on it.
I love it. But tonight we're going to talk about Patricia and Bobby Sexton. So kind of the main idea or whatever of this story is a former beauty queen was the ringleader in a gruesome Texas murder involving the whole family. So Patricia and Bobby Sexton, they were married. They were not brother and sister or anything like that. They kind of were involved in a love triangle that just eventually kind of blew up out of proportion, spread throughout their family, some coworkers, and even some of their lifelong friends. And it all just kind of got tangled up in like a web of murder, which is just wild. But you know, a lot of these stories, there's some type of like love triangle or like, you know, one person cheats on another or scorn lover type situation. And it just never ends well.
All very Keith Morrison bullshit.
Yep.
Not him. He delivers it greatly. It's just all the bullshit he has to tell.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully none of that is his real life. Just what he narrates.
Shout out to Keith. We love Keith. He's our spirit animal here in the podcast room.
He's the bomb. So yeah, let's dive into it. So kind of who are Patricia and Bobby Sexton? Patricia met Bobby in their hometown of Jacksonville, Texas. She really loved him because he was kind of like a country boy at heart. He was much older than her. And he, at that point, was already married with teen children. But the two quickly kind of started sneaking around together. And this information comes from Patricia's aunt, Elisa. And Patricia, she really enjoyed racing cars because her family had a business of trading in junked cars for parts, which they ran from the Bingham Family Campground, which was a large, like, winding property in the Texas countryside where she and her extended family all lived. She also really loved to do, like, all the beauty pageants, which is, I feel like, such a Texas thing anyways, but she really enjoyed doing those. She definitely got the gift of beauty, so worked out in her favor for the pageants, but she was also very wild, and a lot of people, one including her half-sister Brandy, said that she was also very promiscuous. So, you know, it's funny that song popped into my head too as I was researching this, but... So Bobby ended up divorcing his wife in 1991 when they discovered that scandal, Patricia was pregnant with Bobby's and hers first daughter, Chastity. So, you know, he was fooling around with Patricia on the side, got her pregnant, and then ended up divorcing his OG wife. So after he got divorced, him and Patricia eventually got married and then welcomed two more daughters into the picture. So they have three kids at this point. And around this time, Bobby suffered a debilitating work injury while he was on the job at his father's roofing business. And it was like very serious. He actually had to get a placement of a metal rod put in his back. So, and that's kind of a key point as we move through this story as well. But that's like got to be a huge injury, like to get a full-on metal rod placed in your back. I'm assuming he like fell off the roof and that was like the incident.
I don't know, but it doesn't sound like a fun recovery either.
No, it had to be horrible, I would assume. But Patricia, she also had her own health scare when she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. It ended up leading to her having a hysterectomy, which obviously that prevented her from having more children. But, you know, luckily she was able to have three. I know some women aren't even able to have children at all because of this. So at least, you know, her and Bobby were able to have a few kids together. Now, Brandy, her, again, Patricia's half-sister, she goes on record to kind of say, Patricia said that Bobby kind of resented her because she couldn't give him a son, so he got physical. And every time that he would get mad, he would punch a wall. And I think that's, if that's true, that's so ridiculous. Like, yeah, you have three daughters, but you had three kids together. And it's not her fault that she got ovarian cancer and had to get her uterus removed. Like, what? Like, why would you resent her for that and then, like, punch walls and shit? Like, that's big red flags, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So by 1997, Bobby worked for Patricia's grandfather in their mechanic shop at the family compound to help make ends meet. But as that was going on, a lot more trouble was starting to fire up. So kind of flash forward to beginning of 1998 in February on the 21st, Patricia was super distraught and she called the Cherokee County Sheriff's Office to report that Bobby was missing. Eventually, they found Bobby's badly decomposed body. They found his body about a month later after searching, and it was in a brushy swampland in nearby Anderson County. He had a shotgun wound to his chest. So during the initial call, Patricia told police that Bobby's coworker and Bingham family friend, his name was Willie Wright, she says that he urged Bobby to come down to the mechanic's shop on the family property around 11 p.m. one night, and that was the last time that she ever saw him. But Bobby's Chevy Suburban turned up 2 days later under very suspicious circumstances, which obviously raised some eyebrows. Casey Miller, a journalist, says that Patricia actually called law enforcement to inform them that Al Clark had discovered Bobby's vehicle on the road and had driven it back to the house. Al Clark was in a common law marriage with Patricia's mom, so he was kind of a stepdad to her, but not officially, I guess. And they were also living on the property. So, like I said, her basically entire extended family and her were all on this like big compound property, and her stepdad, he had found Bobby's vehicle and drove it back to their house. Retired Sergeant Steven Serrano said it was a gruesome scene. There was blood everywhere. There was 2 to 3 inches of blood in the wheel wells. Now, her stepdad, Al Clark's, he kind of has a little rough of a past himself, which includes burglary and murder charges. So they obviously were like really side-eyeing Al because, for one, he's the one that found the car, and then he has this like shady past. So they at this point made him the prime suspect. Though Al had a shaky alibi, police determined that there wasn't really any, like, hard evidence against him, and they couldn't really pin him to the crime in any way. So he was ultimately later ruled out as a suspect. They also talked to Willie Wright, who, as Patricia stated, was the last known person to see Bobby, and he did confirm Patricia's story. But ultimately, an unusual tipster pointed police in the direction of 29-year-old Michael Fielding, who was another guy who worked at the Bingham family's mechanic shop. And the person who was the tipster was actually Michael Fielding's own mother. So, as retired Lieutenant Serrano remembered, Michael's mother was very curious about the disappearance, but when she pressed her son about Bobby, I guess Michael blew up and then just like stormed out of the house. So his mom called 911 because she felt afraid for her son, which is definitely an interesting move. I mean, good for her, like to like try to like find justice or whatever, even if it was like her own son who did it. But
yeah, you got to dig deep though to turn your own kid in. You know what I mean? That's hard.
Yeah, like, yeah. So I'm not sure, you know, if she struggled with doing that or if she was just right away like, oh, I got to call the police about this. But yeah, it was definitely his own mom who was letting them know about her son. Another crucial tip came in for police. This time it was from an anonymous source. So the tip was that Michael Fielding and another man who was later determined to be Willie Wright were spotted in Bobby's Suburban the night that he disappeared. Defense attorney Jeffrey Clark says those were the missing pieces of the jigsaw puzzle for the investigators. And as luck would have it, Willie Wright was arrested for public intoxication on St. Patrick's Day, which obviously gave police the golden opportunity to question him in custody. You know, they got him. So when he learned that witnesses placed him in Bobby's in that night with Michael Fielding, Clark says that he crumbled. This is a quote. He says he crumbled like a rose petal in August and confessed to all of this.
Like a rose petal in August. That's quite the quote.
I know. I'm like, that's pretty deep, actually.
Like, not crumbling like, you know, a cookie or, you know.
Yeah, like a rose petal in August.
Rose petal in August.
It's so poetic.
Summer night.
Like, right, okay, it's very poetic.
No judgment. No judgment, you know.
Right. So basically, he was just saying he cracked, like, under the pressure. And just like admitted to everything. So according to Willie, when Bobby arrived at the mechanic shop that night, Michael jumped out from behind a car and shot Bobby in the chest with a shotgun in a premeditated plot. They had taken two vehicles so that they could ditch Bobby's Suburban. And then ironically, Michael's car ran out of gas. So like, on their plan. They obviously got freaked out when this happened. They were probably like, oh shit. So
I wonder if they got in a little tussle, like, you didn't get the gas. Well, you were supposed to get the gas. Mother, like, if it turned into like a whole big sidebar fighting over who didn't fill the gas tank up.
Honestly, I could totally see that. Like, I guarantee that had to have happened. Like, they were probably just like pissed off at each other at this point because they were stressed and trying to leave. But yeah, so they were obviously freaked out because the car ran out of gas. So they both jumped into Bobby's car and they found the next bridge to dump his body. So Willie led police to Bobby's body, which Michael allegedly was the one to throw over the bridge into a creek below before abandoning his SUV nearby with the keys inside. Willie was giving them all the tea. He also spilled the details about the motive. Apparently, Patricia and Michael had been involved in an affair. Why can't I say that? In an affair since November.
They were meeting up.
Literally, they were meeting up in local motels. And apparently Bobby discovered
Hotel Holiday Inn. I bet you it wasn't even a Holiday Inn. It's probably, you know what it was? It was the Days Inn because of our ad, and we said they'd leave the light on for you.
Dang, we caused this all. It's our fault.
Although this happened like
before.
It's the simulation, the time travel.
It is.
Continue on.
But yeah, Bobby actually found out about their affair in February. I think he was a little bit suspicious of Patricia, and he followed her to one of their meetups, and him and Michael ended up in a fist fight. Bobby then had for divorce, and Patricia, who was kind of nervous that he would take her children away, she swore to him that the affair was over and, like, you know, please stay with me, I won't do this again, whatever. But, like, and Bobby did give in, and he went back to her, and that was just before the murder. But I just had to say, like, what is that saying? Like, you lose them how you get them or something. So, like, he cheated on his wife with Patricia, and then Patricia was cheating on him.
It's kind of, yeah, it's like, I get it. Like, if I was to be the other woman in an affair, he leaves his wife because he's so in love with me. We get married. I'm always, for the rest of my life, going to be like, is he doing to me what I did to his ex?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, there's always going to be that doubt now. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Yeah. Cause, like, cause you know, they obviously aren't, like, morally against, like,
cheating.
Cheating. So, you know. Yeah. But yeah, so he caught her, but he ended up staying with her. So when police brought Patricia in for questioning, because, you know, Willie was just giving them all this information, she not only denied the affair to police, but she insisted the bond with her husband at that point had been stronger than ever. So, like, she was trying to, like, plead her case, being like, no, like, I have nothing to do with this. Me and him, like, the closest we've ever been. But police weren't really buying her story. Yeah. Yeah. And neither are we. Because especially the other person in this love triangle, if you call it that, Michael, he ultimately confessed also to the murder. So she's, like, saying, no, none of this is true, but Michael's out here with Willie confessing. But he also told police that Patricia and her grandma, Dorothy, were the masterminds for hatching this, like, murder plan. And even to the point of how they're going to clean up the crime scene. So he says they plotted all of this, Patricia and her grandma. He also claimed that Patricia's grandma, Dorothy, gave him a box of rubber gloves to use in the murder, and that she was present when he agreed to kill Bobby. Wow. Michael said Patricia
That's it. Just whale.
Whale. Whale. Literally. So Michael said Patricia told him that she didn't want to be with Bobby anymore. She couldn't take it anymore, but she couldn't divorce him because he would get the kids. Which I don't get why he would get them, really, or why that was, like, such a big concern.
I think she was like, I will, you know, take the kids and maybe fight for custody. That probably, if she's having an affair and hanging out in motels and, you know, planning murders and stuff, I'm probably going to just have to say she's probably not Mother of the Year either.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would be fitting for her character analysis that we're working through here. And investigators also believed that she also had her eyes on a disability claim that had a large payout in the event of Bobby's death. Kind of goes with your intro crime story today. But she allegedly threatened to end the affair with Michael if he did not go through with the murder. Like, that's nuts to me. If someone was like, oh, I won't be with you anymore unless you murder this person, I'd be like, okay, bye. Like, What?
Yeah, no shit. Like, I ain't signing up for that shit. Like,
right. Crazy.
And then I'd be like, so what? Like, you're going to kill me then after? Like,
yeah, like,
it's just gonna keep going. Hey,
I'm going to go to the police now because I'm scared. And more information came out again from another unrelated arrest. Patricia's mother, Linda, she was arrested on a narcotics charge around the time that this was all happening, and she wanted to strike a deal. She said she would reveal details about Patricia and Dorothy's involvement in the murder if the police talked to the district attorney about lessening her charges. I just gotta say,
Mama Bear was involved too. She's planning the scandal too. Her and her daughter are working together. How we get this money? What we gotta do?
This family's crazy. Like, they're all crazy. So, but they agreed. They're like, all right, we'll lessen your charges if you tell us everything that you know.
She's gonna go to prison. She did.
She's like, sorry, good luck.
Staying with this grandma, I can tell you that.
Nope, literally not. So yeah, Patricia and Dorothy were arrested in August of 1998 and charged with the big whammy, capital murder. Ultimately, the jury returned a lesser verdict of murder against Patricia, and she was sentenced to life in prison. She did escape the death penalty, but they charged her with that in 1999. When alleged murder accomplice Willie Wright, he died in the months leading up trial, which kind of sucked for, lawyers and police and everything, because they lost their key witness against Michael Fielding, who plea bargained for 35 years in prison. In a separate trial, Patricia's grandmother, Dorothy, was found guilty of engaging in organized criminal activity and murder, and she served less than 3 years of a 30-year sentence due to a court of appeals finding insufficient corroborating evidence. That's kind of crazy, though. Like, less than 3 years when she had a 30-year sentence. Like, she really got out of that.
Yeah, again, that's where I'm not sure if the justice system is prevailing at its best.
Right, because that's huge. Like, I don't know. Like, there were multiple people saying that Dorothy was in on the plotting of the murder. So it's just kind of crazy that they let her off so easy.
Let her daughter take the fall.
Yeah. So though Patricia maintains her innocence to this day, she does not admit to any of this. Sergeant Serrano said that he still considers her and her grandmother Dorothy the ringleaders of this whole murder. Linda was the star witness against her mother and her daughter during the trial, because she was just looking out for herself, and she was like, fuck you guys, I don't want to go to prison, so I'm gonna tell all your secrets. Linda said, I'm not lying for nobody. My mother always said, as long as everybody tells the truth, everything is going to be all right. Exactly what everybody did, and it wasn't all right.
So. Yeah, there's certain circumstances that might kind of be limited to. Like,
right.
Tell the truth if you're late for curfew. Tell the truth if you, broke something in the house. I mean, tell the truth about murder and it's going to be okay. And yet, not the same.
Yeah, a little bit different. She was just really looking out for herself there, because she did not want to go to prison. So she's like, well, I'm just doing what my mom told me. Tell the truth.
It's like the water boy. Mama said it's going to be okay. My mama said that lying is for the devil. My mama said that if I tell the truth, everything gonna be okay.
I mean, this family had to be so twisted, because if you think about it, so the mom was arrested for narcotics. the daughter and the grandmother were plotting and like basically threatening people to like murder her husband. And the stepfather, he was like, he had charges against him for burglary and murder too. So it's just like, man, crazy town over there.
What town was this again? Did it say?
Yes.
Jacksonville, Texas. Well, yeah. You know what they say, everything's bigger in Texas, so yeah.
Crazy's bigger. I don't know how
that relates to this, but
the crazy in their family was pretty big. But yeah, so that was the beauty queen's fall to plotted murder.
Beauty school dropout. Go no back to high school day
for you.
Oh my gosh. Well, thanks for taking us on that journey.
Yes, no problem. Little bit of a weird, crazy one, but you know.
Hey, that's what we come here for.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the weird, crazy, creepy, all the things.
All the things.
All the things. When you want humor, yes, we go to Dax. When you want creepy, you come here.
We bring a little humor. Not a lot, but a little.
I hope so. We get each other. We try to lighten the mood.
Yeah. We try to lighten the mood. We amuse ourselves, at least.
We really do. So, but yeah, it's been a day, it's been a week, it's been fun. It's right now for us, it is only Wednesday, but it's over. We're over the hump day, so just got to get that Thursday, Friday in, and the weekend's almost here.
We're almost there.
The weather's been, except for today, it was kind of crappy and rainy and that like just gross wetness when you walk outside. Mm-hmm. But a couple days before that, it's been beautiful and gorgeous out and I've been loving it. My windows have been open. I'm like, oh my God, the vibes I can feel it feeling better already.
Yep. It like so, just lightens the mood. I feel like it just really like, makes me feel better. Yeah.
I'm so not much. As tired because it's not dark when I come home.
Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So let's keep on that positive vibe.
Keep on keeping on.
Oh, hell yeah.
But my husband is out of town, so I am going to hang up and go and call him, find out. I don't even know where the hell he's at right now.
Find out where he is.
Make sure the kids are down for the night, school night shit. And then I'm going to go put myself to bed, you know. Work night shit.
Yep. And I feel that.
Start using my little ticker, my little thinker, my little block up here and figure out what we can bring to the table for next week.
Ooh, well, I'm excited. And I know you guys are excited too. So we'll see what you come up with.
My daughter brought me a story. So maybe I'll make her happy and do her story.
Oh, nice.
Yep. And then there's another story that was brought to me, so I got to look into that one. So playing around with some stuff. I got some ideas.
You got options.
I got options. Got some options. So.
Nice. Yep. Well, I'm excited to hear next week what you're going to bring to the table.
Well, hope you all come back. We're going to leave you on a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
On that note, we got to go.
Stay creepy.
Bye. And don't put your P's in any V's without permission. Just saying.
That is the best ending. The best ending statement.
And cut J-Lo a break. Peace.
Yeah.